that was the kind of the end of the relationship. And I thought, okay, what am I going to do? I'll become a rock star, you know, whatever. And, but I was serious. I thought, okay, I've got three kids to feed. What am I going to do here in the south of France to really, you know, and I felt a sense of purpose and an evacuation of some of my ideas that way, you know, kind of a catharsis.
What's up, everybody? It's Armand here. And we got a good one today. We're back with another episode. Today's founder is Indiana Gregg, founder of WeDo. Now, I'm sure you're all aware of the current problem everybody's facing is that there are too many damn subscriptions out there right now. But when you're running a solo business, there are so many fees and subscriptions, WeDo finally said, enough, we're putting a stop to that. They're making it so that if you have a phone, you can run a business. It's an all-in-one payments and business tool for online entrepreneurs and content creators. Indy's a five-time founder, including one of the first music streaming platforms way back in the peak of digital piracy. Yarg. She's a singer-songwriter herself and quite literally a rock star. She's had a wild career path and I mean, WeDo has some really serious backers. They raised a successful $3 million pre-seed round back in 2021, but you wouldn't know it. Indy is so humble, super down to earth, really insightful, very fun person to talk to, and I had an amazing time filming this episode. I hope you enjoy it also. Let me know if you do. Thanks for tuning in to the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard.
It was kind of a surprise thing to do, you know. I've always loved music, and it was kind of my way into being able to express myself from a really early age. I had a speech impediment, and I was introduced to a woman when I was in the first grade in elementary school, who is an orthophonist, so speech therapist, and she had a massive afro, and she just happened to have a big, huge gap in her teeth. So that when she explained how I should articulate myself, I could see where her tongue was going, and she was like amazing. And so I spent around 10 years learning how to speak because I spoke like this. So you can imagine what it was like when I sang, you know, pretty bad, but it did, it got better and better over the years. And I began to learn how to talk to people and not be, you know, quite as much of an introvert as I am. And yeah, so I went to the south of France and I had three children and I was married and I was working in digital, the early stages of, you know, digital life, working on HTML websites, using Dreamweaver and creating artistic stuff. And my husband left the family and went off and, you know, with, I think, a secretary or somebody, I don't know what she did in his company, but that was the kind of the end of the relationship. And I thought, okay, what am I going to do? I'll become a rock star, you know, whatever. And, but I was serious. I thought, okay, I've got three kids to feed. What am I going to do here in the south of France to really, you know, and I felt a sense of purpose and an evacuation of some of my ideas that way, you know, kind of the catharsis. Yeah. You can hit a piano pretty hard. And I was like, I'm dying. My life is over. You know,
you had a lot to write about and sing about, but that's where the best music comes from.
Well, yeah, it was pretty. I was playing really aggressive rock. I was really angry, but anyway, and then I get picked up by a label and I get shipped off to Scotland, and then of course the entire style of music changed because producer is like, oh, you can't do that. You sound like this angry, horrible person. And I'm like, okay, when I am angry, I'm horrible, blah, blah. And then, so I started writing things that are a little bit more uplifting and kind of worked my way around that and toured and did stuff like that. But, you know, it wasn't your typical mother of three move. I had three tiny kids and I go off and be a rock star. And so my parents flew over and I got to go on tour and they looked after my kids. And sometimes the kids came with me. And that's really how that happened. It was just me having a crazy moment. When I look back, I think, what was I thinking? You know, I'm just crazy. Why did I do that? But it did lead. Yeah, it led to a lot of stuff because that was during that period when there was piracy and technology was something I know. Right. So I was like, hang on a minute. I can fix this. You know, I'm going to save the music industry. So I went flying around, giving it right, Sony, right, Universal, listen to me. nobody's going to want to download anything in the future. They don't want your CDs. They don't want your plastic. And they certainly don't want a bunch of gigabytes on their computer, right?
Yeah.
We're going to be streaming in the future. Oh, no, you won't. What if I go camping? I want to bring my music camping with me. And it's like, you'll be able to stream that. And they were like, no, no. But we did pick up a lot of deals and we started to create a lot of traction and a lot of movement in the industry. And then there were spinoffs from that, like Spotify and iTunes wasn't even out yet when we were building that. And it was a wonderful learning curve. I know every mistake you can ever make in technology and every mistake you can ever make with teams and C-suites and everything else from that project. So, but it wasn't a failure. It took off. It was really great. We went to the recession. We had an advertising based model, as did everybody. And every man and their dog was like, ooh, advertising. That's the new way to make money online. You know, you sell advertising against music and then you pay people with it. And of course, that model is what Facebook and Google are using right now, gathering all your data and learning everything about you so they can retarget you. And so I'm glad we didn't continue in that, because I think it's a very invasive way to treat people and humans as individuals, right? But yeah, that's how that happened.
That company was Kirchunes, is that the name?
Yeah.
Nice. And I saw that you managed to get, once you actually launched the product, you got like 14 million users, was it, in 2 years? That's insane.
Something like that, yeah.
Wow.
It proved the demand. We got a lot of press. We ran a lot of ads ourselves. We did a lot of crazy stuff, and probably stuff that was borderline illegal maybe back then, but we didn't know any better. It would be today, you know.
Yeah.
Email lists that you're not supposed to, but it was before GDPR. It was in the Wild West, you know.
You say it was like the wildest thing that you guys did to get that growth so fast.
I don't know. Probably the type of data scraping we did, you know, like harvesting emails, harvesting stuff that you're not allowed to do now.
Yeah.
But it worked, you know.
I mean, at the time, again, it was one of those things like no one really knew it was
what the rules were.
The concept. So everyone was like, all right, we can do this. Like there's no rule against it. So
yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking about a period when MySpace was popular.
Yeah.
And look at all the rules that were broken on MySpace, right? I mean,
yeah,
that was, yeah. The
rules are still
the land is different now.
Yeah, by some of the bigger data companies, but that's a whole other story. the other company that you started back, you were doing this for like 20 years. It was Digital Unicorns. What was
it? Yeah. Digital Unicorns was a design and creatives service. So we would build things. We're a team of like six people. A lot of us have moved on and started other companies. Sometimes we just go in, someone would hire us when we do operations, or like I've gone in to startups or companies and run their operations, and, or I'd work on their marketing campaigns, or I'd work, you know, whatever they needed. I'd fill that transition that to someone else or hand it off. But it was really a digital media company. It still exists. It's still
nice. How many still does stuff. Would you say you've operated in, and like what was kind of your strength whenever you would go in there?
I think my strength is my honesty more than anything. I tell you might not like what you're going to hear, but I'm going to tell you the truth. And some people can play with that and work with that, and some people can't. And generally, the people who don't like the truth are the companies that are going to fail anyway. So they're not really worth a lot of your time, but it's just being pragmatic and saying, here, this is a practical route. Maybe your model isn't working because of this. And then kind of explaining the logic of why a model works better, or why simplicity is better, or why, you know. So my strength is probably my honesty, and that's how I've kept clients over the years and worked with some pretty cool people.
That's a really important strength to have. That does bring me to a question that, so I was recently talking to someone who advises startup founders, and she said that one of the most important traits she notices on first-time CEOs, like if it's their first time ever running a company, she said she can tell who's going to be successful more likely or not based on their coachability and their ability to take feedback and criticisms. How does that kind of relate to your experience?
I think that's a that's 100% true. If someone is not receptive to new ideas or understands some logic behind something and it's their way or the highway, they're probably not going to be successful for a number of reasons. One is the communication with their teams. You know, if you're a standalone solopreneur, you work on your own and it's your way or the highway, fair dues, but you're not going to scale. So what are you doing with a team in the first place? Right. Communication and understanding how to receive feedback and not taking it personally, but understanding that, hey, this is a process. You're learning a process, it is profoundly important. And they're probably just needing to learn that as a human in general, not just in leadership, but you know,
it is interesting. True. Like I've noticed like the way you are at work or at home or with your friends, like it's all kind of the same. Like they're all interconnected. Like your strengths aren't going to be different in different areas of your life and weakness vice versa. It's usually like, if you're a very stubborn person, that's just going to be, you're stubborn everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now your current company, WeDo, from what my understanding of looking into it, it's a social tool that helps people run their own online business. What exactly is WeDo and how'd you get that idea?
So I've worked in consulting for a long time, and I've also used some of the applications to, you know, they're kind of lead gen applications, but who take a big chunk of the pie, you know? Yeah. And I think you should be able to have your cake and eat it too in this new movement where we have more solopreneurs and people who are doing side hustles and empowering people to create new businesses in a world where there's kind of a mass exodus after the great resignation that everyone's talking about in the workplace. More and more people are realizing, hey, I've got this one life. I want to find my purpose and I want to do what it is I was born to do. And if we don't create technology that gives them access to tools they need and gives them open access, we're going to miss out on the next Einstein or the next amazing musician or the next whatever that is, right? Because if we are creating a world where it's money, 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 and we're not giving people access, that's a shame. You know, the internet was built on the premise that we would have more open access to information, to tools and talent, knowledge and skills. Being able to leverage those and make a living is really important. So WeDo is a financial application that lets people communicate, build community around them, take and receive payments and send payments, and do that in real time on a video or audio room. So if you can imagine, Zoom, Twitter Spaces, Clubhouse, any of those tools where you have one-to-one conversations, one-to-group conversations, panel-to-group conversations, or you may just be developing something for someone and want to have the conversation with them and make and receive payments and set up your contracts and your invoicing. WeDo does that for you, and it helps you schedule and align your teams, align your project, align things. And so it's like a social media play, but with a banking application behind it. So we issue you a MasterCard, and you can go pay and, you know, run your business or run your life just like you would with a normal banking application. It's just that rather than just taking money and charging you all over the place, you know, and creating recessions, we're saying, right, here's your banking, here's your business banking, here's your consumer banking, but you can do all these other things and run your business all in one place. And the reason why we can do that without charging a massive SaaS like everybody else does is because we're the bank. So it's like, if you're the bank, you can remove all these barriers and still have a model that works. And I think that's magical because I think it can provide a lot of opportunity. I don't know, you're in San Diego. I saw a lot of homeless people in San Diego. And it's
in Southern California, California in general. Like you go along the coast, a lot of the cities, LA, San Francisco, it's a big problem.
Yeah. I saw too many for me to feel comfortable, you know, and that has to change, you know. And there's a theory that these people are just lazy and they just want to be homeless. That's nonsense. They all had a home before they became homeless. You know, there's a reason why this is happening. And I think technology, you know, charity is one thing. And I think charity is great. But if you can give someone more than charity, give them a tool and a little bit of knowledge so that they can go out and run an errand or get something done, and get themselves back on their feet, that's important. And if we're not doing that, what are we doing? You know,
like teach a man to fish instead of just
giving give him a rod and yeah.
I can tell the passion behind this that you have. It's like clearly a problem that you, I don't know if it's close to you, but like you clearly know it inside out and you're doing something to solve. My understanding is it's like, let's say someone's building a community on your platform and mm-hmm. the members of the community are paying them. They can then use those payments directly. Like that is their bank. They're like the money goes in straight to their bank accounts.
So straight to them.
Interesting.
Straight to them.
Oh, wow. So you are, you're like a social bank, kind of like a social platform bank combo.
Yeah. We're a social bank. We're a social media bank.
How did you think of this idea?
You know, it's simple. I simplify things. And what I wanted to do is remove the barrier. How can you do this? How do you remove having to pay to play all the time? I'm tired of paying for Zoom and PayPal and everything else, right? QuickBooks and this one and that one and this, you know, like how many subscriptions are there? Everybody, the whole world went SaaS.
Yeah.
You know,
I was actually thinking, I recently subscribed to something this week and I was like, damn, how many is that? Like, how many?
Yeah. It's like, okay, we've got, you know, and it's not just entertainment, this all you can eat platforms, right? You got entertainment. You know, if you're a designer, you've already got enough to pay for to run your business and serve your clients. You've got Adobe, you've got computers, you've got these tools, you've got a mobile phone, you've got this, and this, right? And it adds up. You know, so what you can't survive without the internet these days. It's very difficult. And most people keep the lights on their mobile phone. Those are the two pieces of technology, their computer, their mobile phone, their internet. They're going to keep those on. And even the number of homeless people out there, most of them still have their mobile phone. So how can you take this tool and turn it into a living? And that's the problem I wanted to solve. How do we do that? How we do that and make it so that they don't have to pay. So there's no barrier. There's no excuse. If they want to do this, and there's a will, there's a way. They can use it to start finding jobs that are quick, that they can run errands for, that they can, you know, complete a task in their area. We can make it geolocated. So I had this big dream and I thought, where do I start? And the infrastructure for fintech and the banking side of it meant that, okay, there's a model here. This could be possible. And then as they progress and start to build their business, most people will want to maybe pay for a service. So maybe they want business intelligence or whatever we do, you know, in the second phase of the company. But at least we're giving man the fishing rod and not just a fish, you know?
So that was kind of, what exactly is the vision? Was that your vision is to be able to have someone make a living off their cell phone or their laptop?
Yeah, I want people to, no matter what, if they have access to the internet, be able to instantly come on and do something, first of all. Secondly, the vision is that I think that if we create technology that allows people to be themselves, find their purpose, do what they love, we're going to have a lot happier society. We're going to have less friction in society. We're going to have less homeless people in society. And we move towards that, you know, socially. We'll end up having better, more intelligent societies with you know, people using their talent, knowledge, and skills. There's a lot of talent, knowledge, and skills out there, but it's very fragmented. I think the other thing is just simplifying a process that I think is so hard, pulling my clients from pillar to post, just from a personal experience.
Yeah.
Like, this is crazy, you know? Why can't I just instantly say, hey, you want to be on board? Let's do this. I'll send you an invoice. Boom, we're done. Let's get started. Let's move the project forward. And there's so many tools out there that slow you down. And I thought, well, maybe there's a way to sort this out. And then I think really on a global scale, I believe in equality. And I think that we need more equal opportunities for people. And so technology is one place that isn't really biased. It's there. It's a tool. Use it how you need to, right? Whereas other social programs or charity or politics or all these other things introduce inherent biases, opinions of people. Oh, we shouldn't do it that way or this way. Tech is really clear. It's like, here's a tool. Here's an opportunity. here's how it can be, you know, here are some tools that people use that they end up paying for. Here's one that we can make that's fair and gives equal access to everybody. And it doesn't have any inherent bias or unconscious bias, right? And that's why technology is pretty, you know, pretty happening. It's a space where we don't have to be political. Yeah. You know,
tech is a really fun space. It's always just forward movement. That's what I like about it, is that when you keep up, like the industry I'm currently in is cybersecurity. And it's like, there's just every day learning, like something new is breaking through every single day. And I just find that so interesting. You don't have time to pick your biases because they'll probably be broken in like the next week. Like
exactly.
You thought you knew is going to be, you'll find out it wasn't even true the next day. So it's, yeah, it's really interesting. What got you interested in being founder in the first place?
Oof. I wasn't interested. I'm not interested in being a founder. I'm interested in creating things that solve problems for people. In fact, I'm actually interested in creating in general, you know.
I was going to say, with the music background. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, creativity comes from everywhere. I think that, you know, we inherently have this space in our hearts that we're born with, that we know more than we think we know. And then you go through this struggle with learning society. And then the next phase of your life is unlearning what you learned, to go back to that inherent kind of wisdom. There's like a funnel of wisdom that everyone has access to. And I've had a lot of opportunities in my life to not have cut that off. I think I've probably just, I don't know. I don't know if I'm different or if I'm weird, but there's a funnel of energy that passes through each and every one of us. And if we pay attention, we'll move into like a space where there's more synchronicity, more serendipity, and more things open doors for us, because life doesn't have to be a struggle. So I look at life in that way. You know, I don't believe in the external effects that, you know, I have to like cocoon my mind and understand that I'm producing these thoughts. And my thoughts are on a creative level. If I take the next step forward and I take the next step after that, I know I can build and build and build. A lot of people think that it's external forces. They make excuses for why they can't do things, why they can't discover things, why they can't be themselves, because they're so busy trying to be someone else. So I guess it's more interest that way for me. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so where... just like a random question, where do you believe your creativity comes from?
Everything I've ever learned, probably, but I think it comes from an external source. I think that we missed a trick when the Greeks and the Romans talked about genius. It was like something that's outside of yourself, like a muse.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that concept.
It's like, oof, something appears, right? Well, it's like sometimes people ask, well, how do you write a song? Oh, I don't know. It just comes to you. You get yourself into a zone or a space. And all of a sudden it's like, you know, with this idea, with We Do, I woke up one morning, I said, okay. And I told my husband, I was like, hey, I'm going to build a communications app that has a financial infrastructure and it's going to solve problems for a lot of people. He went, okay, go do it. He didn't think anything of it. And I was like, okay. So I started designing it and building prototypes and stuff, and, you know, kind of kept it, you know, like working in the basement, like scientific, I'll pour a little bit of this in like that, and you're like mad scientist type. And when I came out of my tunnel during COVID, you know, came out of my cave, I mentioned it to a pal who I'd worked on another project with, and he said, I'm in. And I'm like, okay. And so he just happened to be the very first CFO of PayPal. And when he said he was in, I was like, okay, I can get a whole bunch of people into this, you know? And so I just kind of went around the houses, and the people that I cared about that had worked with before that thought were amazing people,
that we
culturally fit into this, just hadn't happened to be available at the right moment. And so I didn't get very many no's from anybody. And they just like, let's roll our sleeves up. Let's do this. And really 9 months of work, nobody was paid. We didn't have any money.
Frictionless. This sounds like it all just kind of was it like everything just had to happen, like meant to be.
I don't know. It felt like that. It like in hindsight, it feels like that. It was, yeah, it's just sometimes there's a right place, right time, right scenario for certain things. Not to say that that wasn't hard. It was really difficult raising capital. New idea, really big, huge, bombastic idea, crazy idea, boil the ocean type idea, right?
Yeah.
So I got a lot of no's when it came to getting investors in, but that wasn't going to stop me. So, you know, I just worked harder and did more phone calls and did more and more and more and more and more until I got some yeses. And I thought, okay, now I'm going to get more yeses. So yes, 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 yes. And finally, you know, we got out of the blocks. And we're going to have to do that a few times because you don't build a company like this without a significant amount of investment for to move the ball forward and to move into markets and to, you know, to get it out there. But we're all in love with the idea. We're all in love with the potential that it has. And really, it's about helping more people in the world.
I like that.
You know,
I like that.
The future of all these millennials. You know, we're not going and clocking in and working as much in factories. Automation has replaced a lot of this. There are so many opportunities. You know, if you look at the future of work, the digital nomad, this opens doors. You can work from anywhere at any time if you want to, right? And anyone can train themselves up and have that opportunity to make their living, you know, without a lot of struggle if they just unleash their own personality. So I think that there's a lot of room for this going forward. You know, half the world's workforce are going to be freelancer by 2027. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know,
that's interesting. And I really like what you said, the concept of the muses, kind of the Greeks. Like one quote stands out. There was this guy who's he invented like a really big thing that helped. I can't remember. I'm not even going to try to pretend like I remember, but I remember the quote. He said, I am not, everyone would tell him he's a great inventor. And he's like, I'm not an inventor. I just discovered this. Like the invention was already there. I'm just the one that found out how to do it. And it was really interesting, like change of perspective, where it's like a lot of creatives are just like channels to like the ideas and stuff already.
It's there.
They're there. It's just like we tap into that, like whatever source it is comes from, and then you pull it out. And I've seen that a lot in the music world, like in songwriting, and like sometimes whenever I'm playing the bass, the notes are already there. Like I didn't discover how to play the bass or anything, but sometimes I'll play something and I'm like, wow, that sounds really good. Where did that come from?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think there is a space.
And for me, it's like, if I fall asleep, sometimes I'll go to sleep for like 20 minutes and I'll wake up and it's like the job, the answer, the this, the that, or, you know, and when I was writing songs, I would wake up and, you know, I'd have a song. And I literally had like a recording device next to me. You know, those little, I think it was Sony that created their like mini discs. They're little tiny mini discs. Yeah. So we used to run around with those, you know, in recording studios. If you're writing songs, you'd like collaborate and use a mini disc. So I had this little mini disc thing and I'd wake up and I'd be like, okay, that's the song. Okay, that's done. Next, you know, and it's the same with kind of ideas like this. I woke up one morning and I was like screaming, if you want to beat the bank, you've got to beat the bank. And something my dad used to say, but the whole idea of it, it's like, I just had to grab it. It was there and it didn't come from me. It just was there. You know, there's some sort of God force, inspiration, unlimited tank of wisdom, whatever you want to call it, that exists that you can pull things out of, or, you know, pull them down from, or, you know, the Chinese like talk to the ancestors, right? But there's something there that exists for sure.
Yeah. Sometimes you just get hit with an idea so hard that you can't do anything.
Refuse
but,
it.
Yeah. You can't exist. It just persists and persists.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really interesting. One thing is I've been trying to write every day online, like publish something on LinkedIn or Twitter every day. And not every day is that great. I'm going to be honest. It's sometimes the posts are rough. But when inspiration strikes, because I practice so much, because I do it every day, it strikes hard. And like, mm-hmm. I know exactly what it's weird. It's like the post will write itself. I know exactly what I'm doing. And then I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, that's what they're talking about. What about, okay. So first, you seem like a person who doesn't get stressed easily, but I'm sure in your shoes, there's been many a times where you've gotten some experiences with dealing with stress. How do you normally handle that?
That's a really good question, because I probably internalize a lot of stress. And I know that because it'll manifest. My stomach will get upset if I have something that's really nagging at me. But I do this thing like where I kind of decide, okay, stop. I'm going to stop this thought. I'm going to cleanse my mind, you know? And I do meditate a lot. That's something I do every day, twice a day at least. And when I do that, I often fall asleep.
5 minutes?
Oh, until I fall asleep.
However long it takes then.
Yeah. And for me, it's just like this meditation, this cleansing of my spirit in a way, like where I'll pretend that there's this beautiful force that's just flowing through my body. And I'll just take some deep breaths and I'll like just knock out thoughts. And I have like a little punching bag in my mind that goes poof your way. You know, and I feel like I'm so powerful inside my little mind because I can just like tackle a giant. I can do anything in my mind, right? And it's kind of a wonderful thing because you can bring yourself back to that zone. It is very calming. When I was performing, I would get really anxious prior to a show. And at one point, I'd be like, well, I need like 10 glasses of wine, you know, before I went on. And I thought, you know, this is really stupid. There must be another way for me to calm myself. And that's where that practice really started about, you know, 18 years ago, maybe 20 years ago. When I realized that why would I care about anything other than delivering what's in my heart for this moment for these people, right? And that would calm me down. I would take deep breaths and I would like let this life force, and I would knock away any of my insecurities. That literally, like in my mind, I have a little punching bag that gets rid of thoughts. It just goes poof, you know, like a
that's a good one.
You know, like a whack-a-mole. It's like poof, poof, poof. And I do that and it just calms me down. It's like I've got this, you know.
My favorite is I like to turn my thoughts into balloons and just let them go.
Yeah, balloon or pop them. That's too gone.
I gotta try that now. I just gotta start popping them instead.
You've got a little pin. It's like pop, pop. But yeah. I think that's how I deal with stress a lot. If I'm exasperated or upset about something, I'll go for a walk. In fact, I'll just walk around in circles and like let my thoughts. I kind of like stamping it out of my system. You know, but yeah, trying to do anything that means anything means there will be stress involved. So you have to have some outlets, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then to calm myself down, I read books. I like to read. So.
Do you hate your job? Are you tired of seeing people share their side hustles while you sit on the sidelines? Do you want to join the creator economy but don't really know what you want to create? Well, you're not alone. And to that I ask, have you heard of Ship 30 for 30? Ship 30 for 30 is a 30-day cohort-based learning course that teaches you how to make your first dollar online. Because once you make your first dollar, you can make 10. Once you make $10, you can make 100. And once you make $100, you get the idea. Ship 30 for 30 has taught over 4,000 students the art of digital writing, including the founder of Morning Brew, and they can teach you too. Sign up using the referral link below and you get $100 off the course. Join the creator economy. And when you do, don't forget to check out We Do for all that money that you're gonna be making.
Or something.
Do you have a routine? Do you have like a daily routine you kind of follow or any habits like that?
Yeah, I probably do. Without realizing it, it's not, I don't say I'm doing this, this, and this. I live by my calendar though. Like if I have appointments, you know, everything's in my Outlook and, you know, calendars. But I get up in the morning. I tend to meditate when I wake up. I tend to, you know, come downstairs, make a coffee, hang out with the dogs or walk them if I have time. I have a habit of after I eat lunch, like spending 15 minutes and I kind of go into this sleep zone, you know, which is probably really bad for you. I don't know. The jury's out on that, right? And whether you'll get Alzheimer's or whatever it is, you know, if you have a nap during the day, but I kind of like zone out in my chair and just clear my head so that I'm ready to go again. And yeah, other than that, I eat really clean, if that makes sense. That's something that I've done consistently in my
50, the brain fog.
Yeah, in my 50 years on the planet, you know. So, yeah, I eat really clean. I eat. I try to eat fresh stuff and avoid stuff that, you know, runs around that has legs. But I'm not vegan on purpose or vegetarian on purpose. It's just I like vegetables, you know, and I don't like to eat things out of cans anymore because if I have to read a bunch of stuff, I don't know what's in it, then I don't think that makes sense. You know, I don't think we were built for that. That's really all.
Nice.
I just try to keep my commitments and keep the meetings I have. Sometimes I'm late. You know, if one meeting's late, then I'm late for the next meeting, and then I like, you know.
Yeah, kind of. I guess everyone has those days, though. A little rough start to the morning will kind of trickle down to the rest of your day, but you still make it through. You get through those meetings and wake up the next day. Hope it's better.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's the whole thing. You've got tomorrow. You know, I think people get hung up too much on their routines to the point where if a day doesn't go as they saw it would, or if the plan doesn't go like they thought it should, they get really hung up on it.
Oh, I definitely do that. I'm 100%. I will admit to that right now. And anyone who knows me well will be like, yep, yes, you do.
Yeah, I think that if you do that too often, you're going to disappoint yourself more and more. And I think it might make fun, you know, it might not make sense for people, but I think failing is awesome. I think sometimes failing provides more opportunity. It means you took a risk. It means you did something. Maybe it didn't go to plan. Maybe it was a fail, but so what?
Yeah. You know? That whole disappointing yourself concept I keep hearing. So I think it's, after you said it, I think it's about time I start listening. be a little more flexible about my day. Just let things happen. One thing I try to do to not make it too rigid is, like, I do have like a morning routine that I do, but up until like 8 a.m., wake up till 8. And I try to change the order in which I do things so that it's like I don't get too hung up on like anyone that when I do them, like, I don't know. That's just a little silly thing that I do.
You drive a car, when you drive a car, do you always choose the same route or do you take different paths?
Oh, whatever Apple Maps says, I'm not directionally. I am not the directions person. I have many strengths and that is not one of them. So my mom always jokes that like Apple Maps could tell me to drive 3 times in a circle around my location before getting there. And I would do it until it says, all right, you have arrived.
Wow. How old are you?
But I'm 24.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. So you are that generation that's really dependent on that.
I did. Yeah. I do remember being young and like helping my dad with a map or like having to print out MapQuest. Like old enough to where I remember printing out MapQuest and like having to read out the directions, but young enough to where like when I started driving, it was already maps. So I never really had to deal with that part.
Yeah. I mean, you live in a big city. San Diego's a pretty big city to get around.
There's a lot to it.
Yeah. But I remember when I was 24, you know, driving across the country and not having a map in the car and just following the road signs to get to my destination. And then nobody had mobile phones. Right. So you would phone up your grand, like my grandma lived in Florida. So I would drive from the state of Indiana, from Terre Haute, all the way down to Florida and sometimes to North Carolina without a map, just me, gas in my car, my suitcase. And then I'd get to Florida and I'd get to like North Fort Myers where she lives. And I'd call her up from a payphone with a dial, rotary dial, you know, quarters in.
Yeah.
Hi, Grandma. I don't really remember how to get to your house. And she'd be like, you take Highway 40 run, you turn right at the Shell factory, then you move in, you know, then you're going to take a left and our house is number, whatever her number was. Right. But people don't do that anymore.
I remember I took a trip to Greece with one of my friends and we were like, okay, the directions to the hostel, we looked at it. It was like from the ferry, 30 meters to the left. And then like however many meters right. And I was like, they don't even tell
you're
us
like how big is like, a meter?
Yeah. Like how many feet is that? what am I looking at here? But I just remember, I was like, yeah, there was a time where you really didn't have a map or anything. Like it was 30 meters that way. Like we would say that the whole trip. We're like 30 meters that way. That's where we're going.
You know, there are tribes that actually their entire language is based on direction.
Really?
Tribes? So I can't remember, but if you look up TED Talks, like there's this tribe that the entire tribe is based on direction. So they'll be like how they greet themselves. Like instead of saying, hey, how are you doing? Or good morning, you know, or they might say, where are you going? And instead of saying, I'm going up the road to the shop, they'd say like north, west, and then south. And then, you know, like they actually, their whole language is built around, you know, direction.
I want to look this up. Yeah. So if they're happy, they're like, oh, I'm feeling north. I'm feeling up.
Yeah. I'm like northwest, or like my northwest shoulder is in pain right now.
You know? I'm a little south today, but I'm hoping after I meditate, I'll be north.
Yeah, you know, well, today's gone a little bit east for me, but I'm getting to, I'm going west and south, you know, a little bit this evening.
That's
funny. Because I'm going out to dinner at north, northwest, west, east, I don't know, whatever. But yeah, it's true. Look it up.
Yeah, I'll look up the talk. I'll try to throw it in the show notes so that anyone listening can check this out, can start learning the language. Because that's how I'm talking from now on.
But don't you think that would be brilliant if like everything you did was like, well, my northwest knee is in pain right now, doctor.
Oh my God. Their spatial their spatial intelligence must be through the roof. Like their understanding of where they are. All right.
You know, it's funny, like pigeons, right? They do the same thing. They follow networks and they like know where they're going. I guess we're bad at that now that we have GPS.
I sure am. I'll admit it. What do you like to do for fun? What are some of the things we've talked a little bit about your creative outlets. I mean, music is a clear one, but is there anything else you like to do?
Yeah, I like to dance. I like to, you know, I like to get in a zone and dance. I think that's a lot of fun. I like to read books. I love to read books. I love to consume tons of information that's not on a screen. I love
what kind of books?
I read a lot of business books. I read a lot of psychology books. I read a lot of books about the nature of the world and social books, just getting insights from other people. I like to read books that dead people wrote. I feel like there's something spiritual about that. And like, there's this kind of awe, you know, that they took the time, they've left that as a footprint of their existence and that they had these opinions during that time when they lived. So I really like to read from dead people and talk to dead people that way. And I like to travel when I can, you know, and see new places and experience new things, new food.
What got you out to London, by the way? Cause you mentioned a little earlier, you're from Indiana.
Yeah, I'm from Terre Haute. I was born in Terre Haute, so I'm a Hoosier. I moved to Europe in 1993.
And you spent a lot of time in Europe.
Yeah, more of my life in Europe than than I did in America even. And I, you know, I met a guy, moved to the Côte d'Azur in the south of France in Mougins near Cannes, where the Cannes Film Festival is, and kind of started life there. And lived in a lot of countries in Europe over a period of years. Lived in Finland and lived in Manchester in the UK, lived in, you know, Spain and Germany and lots of places, and discovered other cultures. And what that did or what that does for anyone who takes that opportunity to do that is it gives you real insight into your own culture, you know, and you realize there's some things that are great, some things that are not so great, and that humans all over the world operate very similarly, you know.
What's been what city would you say you recommend the most?
I love Valencia. It's been voted the best standard of living. For like, you know, lifestyle numerous times over the last decade. There's a mentality here that's super special. They put people first. They look after each other. They're happy, happy people. And there's a lot of innovation here as well. And there's a lot of art, like Berkeley's here, Berkeley College music is here.
Really?
So we have a lot of artsy people. Yeah. So the
Actually, my roommate in Boston was, he took a trip, like his study abroad was in Valencia. And ever since then, he like goes back all the time. He still talks to his host parents and like still goes back like years later, loves the city, talks a lot about it. So I've heard like really great things. I didn't know there was a Berkeley there though. That's awesome.
Yeah, there's a Berkeley here. The if you look up the Valencia City of Sciences, City of Arts and Science, you'll see some of the cool architecture. So it's amazing because you have this modern infrastructure, but you have all these beautiful buildings that are way old. I think it's interesting too, because Spain's a rather new democracy. And, you know, it's not been that long ago since Franco, a little bit before you were born, but not quite. Not so long ago. And so understanding the generations and the way that they express themselves with family, Valencians have tons of cool traditions. It's really funny, some of the stuff they do. They burn these massive effigies and stuff, and they have all these festivals. It's a really fun place to live, but I think, yeah, they're very open, the Spanish people.
That's awesome. And
they're cool. So it's fun. I would recommend Valencia over Paris any day. If you really want to experience. Yeah,
I definitely want to travel more Europe. I've been to Greece, and I was supposed to go this summer, but we decided to switch to Colombia. I was going to go to Morocco and Spain, actually. But we decided to switch to Colombia, and I'm pretty excited. I've been to Central America a lot because that's where my dad's from, but I've never been to South America. So it should be a nice, really nice trip.
Yeah. Colombia is beautiful. That'll be a pretty amazing experience, I'm sure. Morocco is pretty crazy fun. You know, it's a little bit, yeah. If you go to kind of the souk area and hang out, you'll like that a lot. And it's not very far from Spain. You know, actually, Spain has a spot right next to Morocco that it's part of Spain, but it's in Africa, and it's right over the border from Morocco. It's called Melilla, and so you can cross over the border and be in Spain, and be in Melilla, it's a coastal town. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And then you go straight up, you can get to Gibraltar, the Rock of Gibraltar. That'd be fun to do. And then go up into Spain, to Malaga in that area, and then come up the coast and come visit me in Valencia.
Valencia? Oh, I thought you were, okay, so you're in Spain now. You're in Valencia, not London.
Yeah. Right now I'm in Valencia, and our company is in London, but I've been in Valencia.
I get it. Okay.
Yeah. Last 6 months or so.
Yeah. I'll say hi whenever I go. I know my family's going to Spain, so I'll definitely, yeah. Sick.
Yeah. And definitely see Barcelona. Go to Barcelona because it's cool too.
I've heard that. I was really looking Morocco. What I really wanted to do is we were supposed to do like this, tents like right outside the Sahara, like you go on camels, go out there, and I thought that'd be so cool. I've always wanted to see that desert. Like I always, yeah, that'd be sweet. But
yeah,
for another time. Indy, thank you very much for coming on. It's been so much fun having you, talking to you. Now I just have like a couple quick random questions, and then
we're more random.
Yeah. These are more random. And we've already talked about a lot of these, so like I'm curious what the actual answer is, but like what kind of music do you listen to, and like what songs would you recommend to others? And what your own songs. Your own songs, if they're on Spotify or Apple, I'll put those in the show notes too.
Well, I don't listen to my own songs. I don't know if anybody listens to their own music. What kind of song? It really depends on my mood, right? So I love Guns N' Roses. So I love like going back in history and listening to them. Yeah. Sweet Child of Mine. Like it just puts me in a happy mood. You can pick music like based on how you feel, right? So, I love a lot of the soul music. I love Aretha Franklin, R-E-S-P-E-C-T, the whole Blues Brothers soundtrack, like that movie that makes me happy. It's really funny. Modern stuff that I really like. I really love Aloe Black. I love his music. you know, I Need a Dollar, all of his like everything on that album, everything on his new stuff. I just think he's got a remarkable voice, and he's also one of our advisors for We Do. So I thought,
really, that's so cool.
I love him. I think he's gonna really, really go places and really have a profound footprint in the music industry as he moves forward. He's a genius. He's brilliant.
He's got a really soulful voice too.
Yeah, and he's just got something to say. You know, he really does. He's got something in his heart to say that he's really brilliant. You know, I think he's one to watch in the future, and he's very versatile, which is cool. I love all kinds of music. It's crazy. I love jazz. It depends on what mood I'm in, you know. I'll even listen to heavy metal. It's not my favorite. I like a lot of country songs as I've like kind of chilled out more. I kind of like to listen to country
music.
What's
your go-to genre for fun?
Oh, for fun, probably dance tunes, you know, club tunes and stuff. Yeah. You know, I love that. But then I love to go back and listen to old stuff. You know, I had like kind of this way of thinking of years based on what was playing on the radio, you know, as I was growing up. So every year, well, that's the year that so-and-so, you know, and I can kind of gauge what time it is, because I'm not as spatial when it comes to time. I feel like time's all the time. And I feel like I woke up now 30 years have passed and I'm like, where'd that go? You know? So, so yeah. What about you? What do you listen to?
My favorite, especially for fun, is 70s funk. I like a lot of soul, but 70s funk is like, that's why I love playing the bass. That's honestly why.
Nigel Rogers type, yeah. Right? Yep.
Bootsy Collins. You got all the good stuff. James Brown. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff. And then I like classic rock. That was like a genre that I grew up a lot on, but mm-hmm. now it's more, I like more indie rock. I like rap and hip hop. I like,
do you like the Chili Peppers since you're a bassist?
I do. Yeah. Flea is incredible. I'll get to the point where I can play some of his songs. it's like the pace of it is so fast.
Yeah.
I like the Chili Peppers a lot, actually. They were probably one of my favorite bands. In like fifth and sixth grade, my favorite bands were like Red Hot Chili Peppers, AC/DC, Aerosmith, and Led Zeppelin. Like that's as a kid, that's what I listened to. It like changed over time, but yeah, it's good stuff.
I had that period actually of AC/DC. I had the t-shirt. I loved them. Yeah. Chili Peppers are pretty awesome. Like it's hard to not like them and be a musician.
I saw that's very true. Yeah. They're like musically, you wouldn't expect, they're really good. But I remember 2015, I went to Coachella and I was the happiest person ever seeing AC/DC live, because I was like a senior in high school and everyone around was so much older, but I was like, dude, sixth grade me is freaking out right now. Like, I never thought in my life I'd see them live, but here I am. It was sick.
That's really cool.
You got any favorite shows or movies that you like, that you'd like to recommend?
Well, I love the Blues Brothers. Like, I love that, you know, you'd mentioned James Brown. Movies, gosh. I don't know, recent ones or old ones. I loved Interstellar. Anything. I love that. I love Interstellar. I love movies that like tap on your shoulder with that message, that kind of universal love philosophy that flows through the story. That's not in love story, not in chick flick territory. I'm talking about like that more deep consciousness kind of thing. And you go, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. You
know? I love Jodie Foster. I think she's amazing. One of my favorite actors is Denzel Washington. I think he's brilliant. I don't know why. I just think he's amazing. Like
Training Day stands out whenever I think of him as like a phenomenal actor. That one.
I know he's had some bad rap recently, but I love Will Smith. I think that, you know, he shows his human side so well, and he's just brilliant. He was wonderful in the movie where he plays Venus Williams and Serena Williams' father. He's brilliant in everything he does. He's just amazing. So I love him, and I make it a point to watch all of his films. He's got this deep, deep special something in him, you know. I don't know. What else do you think? I like science fiction a lot. I have a lot of fun watching science fiction.
That's sweet. And now finally, what kind of books are you reading?
Whew. Right now I'm reading. I love Malcolm Gladwell. Do you know
that's him? Okay. When I was talking about that quote, it was from The Bomber Mafia by Malcolm Gladwell. It was, they talk about one of the inventors of like the bomb site, the Norden, something Norden, the bomb site that like Norden bomb site that he invented. He was saying like, I'm not the one that created this. I just found it. Like the idea and the invention itself was there. I'm just the discoverer. But yeah, it comes from, I read that in Malcolm Gladwell's The Bomber Mafia. Great author. I really like that was the first Gladwell book I'd read. And I was like, at the end, he just has this way of like, with the last paragraph, just tying together the entire story. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah. I think he's really insightful. And you know, really, really like, I have a lot of his books. I read a lot of books about products. I'm a geek. I read a lot of stuff about cryptocurrency, NFTs, Bitcoin, anything that I can geek out on like that. But like for fun, I think like he's one of the ones I really like. I like psychological books. I mean, I don't know if you can see behind me, but there's like, I've got like 10 bookshelves in this room and they're all pretty full. I just got done reading Reid Hoffman's book again, The Startup of You, because he's coming out with a new edition. I like to read, again, science fiction books. I like, Atwood, Margaret Atwood. I think she's pretty cool. If I'm going to read fiction, I like her stuff. Yeah.
Nice.
But right now I'm really reading more about psychology, leadership. I like Blink by Malcolm Gladwell. I think that was great. I finished that a few weeks ago. I've got several of his books. And then I have books that I go to just so I can remember reading them. And like, I'm like, okay, random chapter. I'm going to open you up because I know this is going to be great. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. And where can people find you?
On the internet. On the internet. Obviously we do. So if you download We Do, the app in Google Play or the IE app store, We Do, WEDO, get WeDo.today. I'm always under the tag at Indiana Greg everywhere. You know, some channels I'm on more than others. LinkedIn, I'm on more than I am, you know, other stuff. I do a bit of Instagram and Twitter. Haven't really ventured out on TikTok that much because I don't know. Haven't figured that out yet. Well, yeah. I'll do it eventually. But yeah, this is, you know, find me. I post actually on Clubhouse. My phone number, my email address, everything's there. So if you really want to talk to me, you can get in touch pretty quickly, I guess. Just watch your time zones. Don't wake me up at 3 in the morning.
Thank you very much for coming on. It was great talking to you. And I look forward to seeing how WeDo does in the coming years.
I look forward to seeing you there. I hope you're doing your podcasts on there.
I mean, after what we were just discussing, what's going on with the video, then maybe.
Exactly.
Right. Thanks, Indy.
All right. Talk to you soon.